Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Twisted Sisters True Crime Podcast. I will be your host today, Rocio.
And I'm your co-host, Erin.
Today, I will be covering the case of Diane Schuler. This one is a little different because it's not just someone going out and murdering people on purpose. It's more of a case where, like, 8 people died in a car crash, but the reason behind it is, like, sketchy. I'm excited to tell y'all about this case because I found it very interesting, and it's also kind of maybe like a case of knowing our limits and speaking up when we have too much on our plates. So as we get further into the case, y'all will understand what I mean by that. And I feel it is best to start this case with a little backstory of the type of person that Diane Schuler was, because that has been kind of controversial because of the accident. Okay, so we're gonna go ahead and get started.
I am interested.
Yeah?
This is gonna be a good one.
Okay. Who was Diane Schuler? Diane Hance was born November 13, 1972, in Floral Park, New York. She was the eldest born to Warren Hance and his wife, Eileen McKeough. Can you see that?
McKeough. I have no idea. You know me, I can't pronounce things.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Okay, so moving on. 3 younger brothers followed her. But when Diane was a child, her mother, Eileen, left the family. The Hanses were a working-class suburban family, and Diane's dad began to rely upon his daughter to care for her younger siblings and the house and make meals. So she basically became a caretaker at the age of 9.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was already, like, a tremendous responsibility to place on a child.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe this could have caused Diane to have a lot of resentment, but she hid it very well under her pleasant, pleasing demeanor. So her friends knew she had a lot to deal with, but even long-term friends did not know that over time, that resentment began to build into rage or the ways that she chose to manage her stress. So for instance, Diane did not discuss her parents' divorce with friends or even tell her closest girlfriends that her mother left the family. And she refused to speak with her mother after the divorce.
Oh, wow.
So I feel like that just, like, shows you that she, like, keeps a lot of stuff to herself.
Oh, yeah. It's like she just bottles it all up.
Yeah.
Which we know is not good.
Because it's gonna explode.
Exactly.
Okay. So, Diane also grew up Catholic. I also grew up Catholic, but mine wasn't, like, super strict. My mom was more lenient, but the rules of Catholicism was still present. There was this article that explained it very well, what Catholicism is, in a way, kind of how it feels. I'm gonna quote them. Responsibility, commitment, and sacrifice were common themes in my childhood. You don't complain about your burdens, you suffer them in silence, and when you find something that takes the edge off, you accept it gratefully.
Wow. Honestly, that explains your entire, like, relationship, like, between you and your mom. That makes so much sense to me now.
You think so?
Yeah, like, just what you just said, completely, just, like,
yeah,
like, just think, like, of you and your mom and, like, shit that, like, has happened. Like, I feel like that completely described how you grew up and how everything came about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. I can see that. Yeah. Diane was a good student and a soccer star in high school. She enrolled at Nassau Community College, which she attended on and off before meeting and marrying Diane Schuler. Diane Schuler. Wow. Daniel Schuler.
She married herself. She said fuck that.
She married herself.
She said fuck that shit.
Daniel is an outdoorsy guy who loved whitetail deer hunting. He took a job as a public safety officer, and Diane eventually rose to a mid-level management position with a cable company. Can you see that picture?
Yeah, I can see it.
Yay! That's Diane and Daniel.
They just look like your typical little couple. Like, you know what I mean? Just like your typical
Yeah.
early, like...
They're a cute couple.
What? Early 2000s, late 90s. Like, yeah, they're cute.
Mm-hmm. That picture is from them on their wedding day. They had two children, Brian, he was born in 2004, and Emma was born in 2007. After their marriage, Dan let Diane take over the finances and many of the decisions in their life. It came naturally to her, and he would later describe his wife as reliable, trustworthy, and honest. And then that picture that I put is of Diane and her husband and their three daughters. That's a cute picture. Looks like it's on the beach.
Yeah, it looks like a family vacation.
Yeah. It is clear in retrospect that during the last years of Diane's life, pressure began to build up. She had flashes of impulsiveness, like the time she left to buy groceries but came home with a Jeep. That's funny.
I wish I could do that.
Like, just go.
Like, just say,
I'm gonna go get the groceries.
Yeah, be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go get some groceries, and then come home with a whole ass new car.
And be like, beep beep.
I wish I had the finances to just go do that. She was living her best life. Was it rash and impulsive? Yes, but I wish I could do that.
Same. Some friends witnessed pushy or rude behavior. Like when she was driving, she frequently laid on the horn to other drivers. She was not afraid to chew out a sales clerk. Ooh. Ooh. And her weight began to increase. Did she start becoming into a Karen? I feel like that's what happened.
Yep, it took over her.
So, Diane also would smoke a joint before bed.
Ooh.
Like, okay, whatevs. No judging.
No.
Close friends and family knew that Diane smoked pot recreationally. She wasn't known as a drinker. However, Diane was at most a two-drink gal at social events. She'd go on shopping sprees to de-stress and watched reality shows like Dancing with the Stars after putting the kids to bed. She was like a total suburban mom.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah. Daniel didn't get home from his job until after Diane and the kids were asleep, and he was sleeping when the family woke up the next morning. That meant that Diane was essentially running the household and parenting alone. She never said to her husband or anyone else, hey, I'm struggling. So that's kind of what I meant earlier about kind of knowing your limits and not being scared to say, like, I need some help.
Yeah, and especially I feel like from the mom standpoint, like, she probably had that mother's guilt of, I don't need help, I've got this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But, like, dang.
So she just takes on everything.
Three kids? That's a lot.
It is. To do all by yourself? Yeah.
Additionally, during my research, I also learned that Diane was reluctant to seek medical help, even though she was a lifelong diabetic. The last several weeks of her life, she was also dealing with pain from an abscessed tooth. Pain that could easily have been remedied with a trip to the dentist. If she was experiencing psychological pain, it seems likely that she would not have sought professional help either. So all this information that we're finding out about Diane, we can see that she is a super mom. She does everything by herself and she doesn't ask for help. She has her own ways to decompress and she can hide it really well, because I had mentioned her friends didn't really know everything she had gone through. So it seems like she keeps tough life situations to herself, which can be bad because eventually you just have enough and explode, right?
Exactly. So that's
what we're gonna get into.
Oh no.
The camping trip. Okay, so on the last weekend...
That never starts out good.
What do you mean?
The camping trip. Remember the story that...
Shasta?
Oh, Shasta. They went on the camping trip.
Yeah.
That wasn't a pleasant camping trip.
That was scary. On the last weekend of July 2009, Danny, Diane, and their family drove to the Hunter Lake Campground in Parksville, New York, approximately 140 miles northwest from their home. They brought with them Diane, three They brought with them Diane's three nieces, Emma, she was 8 years old, Allison, 7, and Katie was 5. The girls were the daughters of Diane's brother, Warren, and his wife, Jackie. The two families were close, particularly... Why do I say that so weird? Particularly Diana Jackie.
Particularly, I can't say it now.
It's just a weird word right now. The sisters-in-law often enjoyed time together, and the cousins were close friends. Jackie and Warren were happy to send their daughters along with their cousins camping for the weekend. They trusted Daniel and Diane to take good care of their girls.
Oh, God.
They also loaned Diane their red minivan for the trip. So, by all accounts, the weekend was relaxing and enjoyable. The five children played together, including on Daniel's boat, and the parents relaxed. They brought alcohol with them for campfire cocktails, and Diane also smoked a joint on Saturday night. I like how whenever I was looking it up, they're like, yeah, she smoked a joint. Like, you don't really even know exactly what she smoked or, like...
Yeah, like, why? Why did that need to be inserted? But all right.
Yeah, they just want to make sure you know that she's a pothead.
Yeah, for real. They're just like, warning, pothead.
Yeah. But they need to be home by midday Sunday. Diane promised Warren and Jackie to have Emma home in time for her dance recital that evening. And Diane, of course, would need to be back to work on Monday morning. So neither her husband Daniel nor her brother and sister-in-law had any idea that Diane was not feeling like herself that weekend. So now the drive home. Daniel was the first to wake up that Sunday morning around 5 a.m. He got up and began cleaning his boat, then packing the van and his pickup. Diane and the kids woke up around 7 a.m. Diane got them dressed and ready to leave. At 9:30 a.m., Daniel left in his pickup truck. We do not know if there had been any discussion of splitting up the kids between him and Diane. Instead, he left alone with the family dog. Diane and Warren's minivan departed with the kids just behind Daniel. The owner of the campground saw the family leave and noticed nothing out of the norm. They seemed in good spirits, he said. Dun, dun, dun.
I'm so anxious.
20 minutes later, Diane stopped at a nearby McDonald's for breakfast. She and the kids entered the restaurant, ordered food for dine-in, and the kids played together. Again, employees later reported that the family seemed fine and happy. Just before leaving McDonald's around 10:30 a.m., Diane purchased an orange juice for herself. She carried it to the minivan, and then she and the kids piled in and hit the road again. And then just 13 minutes after leaving McDonald's, Diane stopped again, this time at a gas station. She left the kids in the van while she entered the store alone. CCTV showed her entering the store looking a little bit stressed. She ran her hands through her hair as she spoke with the clerk. He later told police that she asked for Tylenol and gel caps, and when he told her the store did not carry it, she was upset. As she departed, CCTV again showed her looking stressed as she returned to the van. After this, several drivers later reported seeing a red minivan driving erratically, weaving in and out on Route 17, Interstate 86, and Interstate 87. Diane was tailgating, honking her horn, and even straddling two lanes. That seems very dangerous.
Good Lord.
And already, I'm like, how did we go from, like, this woman picking up McDonald's to, like, her weaving in and out of traffic like that?
Yeah, like, what the hell happened? 0 to 100.
Yeah.
Sounds like manic, like, bipolar disorder. Because the impulsivity of buying a Jeep when you're supposed to be getting groceries.
Yeah.
I mean...
The trip back home should have taken approximately 2.5 hours in Sunday traffic. Even counting for the two stops that morning, Diane and the children should have arrived back at the Hanses around 12:45 p.m. Why was Diane in such a rush and so aggravated? Other than returning Emma in time for her dance recital, what other reason did Diane have to get herself and the five children home? That's why I'm like, it's weird.
Yeah, it's real sus. Like, why are you in a hurry?
Yeah.
That much and angry when everything seemed fine.
And so, like, the next thing that they looked at was Diane's phone log. There are several phone logs logged on Diane's phone starting at 11:37 a.m. That's when Diane called Jackie to report that she was running late, but should not be too much longer. Her sister-in-law did not notice anything unusual during that call. But at 11:45 a.m., Diane was seen by another driver at the side of the road beside the parked van. She was leaning over with her hands on her knees as if she might be vomiting. Ooh. There was another call logged at 12:08 p.m., an incoming call from an unknown caller. Then at 12:58 p.m., again at least 15 minutes later than they should have been home, yeah. 8-year-old Emma called her father from Diane's phone, and she said, "Daddy, there's something wrong with Aunt Diane, and she's having trouble seeing, and she's talking funny. She is slurring." Warren asked to speak with Diane. She told him she felt strange. Her brother said to stay where she was, that he would come to them. While they were speaking, the phone suddenly disconnected. Like, if she would have just, like, pulled over, it could have ended right there. That's what I don't understand, too. Like, why did you not just stay, like, pulled over?
That makes no sense.
Yeah. Warren called back at 1:01 p.m. That call lasted for 9 minutes. He spoke again with Emma, who gave him descriptions of their location that led him to believe that they were near the Chapin Z Bridge Toll Road. They happened to be right across the street from a state police barracks at the time. Barracks at the time. He spoke to Diane again and told her to wait where she was, that he was coming. However, she kept driving.
What the fuck?
There were 3 phone calls attempted shortly after this, but they appeared to be missed dials that went nowhere, and Warren called again but got no answer. That's because by the time of his last call to his sister, she no longer had her phone. It was sitting on a guardrail near the toll booths on the Tappan Zee. Did Diane leave it there on accident, or was it intentional act to cut off communication? That's also something that I was like, that is so weird.
Right? But like, what the...
Why would you...
What the hell is wrong with her?
Like, what's going on?
Yeah, like, I don't get it.
Like, everything that's happening, I'm like, yeah. So now, at 1:33 p.m., 2 separate drivers called 911 to report a vehicle entering the Taconic State Parkway from an exit ramp. Diane ignored or could not see the multiple signs reading one way as she entered the parkway and began barreling in the wrong direction at speeds of up to 85 miles per hour.
Oh my God.
4 more emergency calls were placed by other drivers and passengers warning about a vehicle driving the wrong way. Some said that the woman at the wheel appeared focused, intent, and determined. I suspect instead that she was having problems seeing clearly, and she was trying to decipher what was ahead of her. Squinting to see could look like determination, too.
Yeah, I could see that. Or, like, having her eyes open, like, really wide, trying to, like, see better.
Yeah.
I could see that, too.
Yeah. Just 1.7 miles later, Diane hit another vehicle head-on. The car, a Chevy Trailblazer, was driven by 81-year-old Michael Bastardi. His 49-year-old son, Guy, was in the front passenger seat, and their friend, 79-year-old Dan Bongo, was in the rear seat. As the minivan hit the Trailblazer, it then struck another vehicle, a Chevy Tracker. The red minivan burst into flames upon impact. It went careening off the highway into a grassy area.
Oh, wow.
Michael, Guy, and Dan were killed immediately upon impact. Diane Schuler, her daughter, Erin, and her three nieces also died in the crash.
Oh, my God.
Diane's son survived the accident with several injuries, and the passengers in the tractor suffered minor injuries. Several people who witnessed the accident immediately ran to assist the victims. Diane was the first put out of the car. The man who pulled her from the front seat saw a broken bottle of vodka inside the vehicle. That's like...
Wow.
I was like, what? A bottle of vodka?
Like, it's even, like, stated she wasn't really... Yeah, but, like, she wasn't really a drinker. But also... She was so good at holding stuff back, she could have also been hiding that.
That is true.
You know what I mean? She held so much of her life in, that could have been part of it too. That could have helped her keep all those bad parts back.
True. The four girls were piled together, lifeless. Brian Schuler was found a moment later under one of the seats. He would wear an eye patch for several months, but did recover from his injuries. He has no memories of the crash or of the incidents that led to the death of his mom, his little sister, and his beloved cousins. Now, let's get into the investigation. So, the vodka bottle was the first warning sign. Investigators at the crash site were looking for an explanation for why this supermom drove the wrong way, killing herself and seven others. Then, 9 days later, the toxicology reports were released. Daniel Schuler, Warren, and Jackie Hance, and everyone who knew Diane were shocked at what was discovered. Diane's... Oh my God. I'm so sorry if you can hear, like, little kids playing, but they're, like, playing right now. They just decided to come outside, and it's, like, so loud. So I feel like you're going to be able to hear, like, little kids shouting in the background.
I can hear it a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like you'll be able to hear it. Sorry.
Whoopsies.
So Diane's toxicology report revealed she had a blood alcohol content of 0.19%. The equivalent of 10 drinks and more than twice the legal limit, as well as a high blood level of THC. Obviously, you know, marijuana.
Yeah, the active ingredient. But like,
I've always been like, how do you exactly test for marijuana consumption to know how recent somebody has smoked or how high they are?
Yeah, I think that's really hard to gauge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Alcohol, they've gauged it a lot more. But I don't think they've gauged, like, marijuana intake as much. Like, yeah, okay, it probably was awful, the alcohol, but you can't really say as to how high she was versus how drunk she was or cross-buzzed. We don't know.
That's what I think so, too. So while there was no forensic evidence of long-term alcohol abuse, such as an enlarged liver, this does not discount the notion that Diane may have only recently been abusing alcohol. Her weight had gone up in the months prior to the crash, which could indicate sudden binge drinking. In the evenings after she put the kids to bed, was Diane self-medicating with more than just marijuana? That was a little question.
I think it's funny.
Isn't it funny? I'm like a TV show, you know?
Asking all the questions.
I'm like the narrator. Vodka is a likely choice for someone who doesn't want others to know they're drinking. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think I kind of knew that because they kind of do that in a lot of movies, like Safe Haven when the ex-husband or whatever, he was drinking, but he was drinking vodka and he was put in his water bottle, so it looked like he was drinking water all day.
Yeah. Also, apparently the smell, something about the smell, it doesn't leave the telltale scent of booze.
It doesn't like linger as long.
Yeah. Several families were ripped apart by the deaths and by the findings that Diane Schuler was drunk and high. Four little girls were dead, including all three of Warren and Jackie Hance's children. The Bastardi and Longo families were devastated.
That's awful.
That's like a big car crash.
For real. And I can't imagine those parents.
Mm-mm. No.
Or anybody, like any of the families.
I just think it must have been so crazy.
I couldn't imagine.
But...
And then him being on the phone, yeah. like the uncle being on yeah. the phone with his daughter mm-hmm. just minutes before.
Yeah. And like that they had just talked on the phone and he was like, stay on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And she didn't.
And she's like, nah, zoom, zoom.
Like, I got this. Like, what?
No, you clearly do not got this.
That's the sketchy part.
Yeah, like, I don't get why she didn't stop. It's like she intentionally wanted this to happen.
Yeah, very weird. When Daniel Shuler went on live TV, the Larry King show on CNN, and denied that his wife was a drunk or that she would deliberately kill herself, her children, her nieces, or anyone else, that was too much for the victims to take. Daniel's denial fell to the victims' families like another blow. Here's a quote from one of the daughters. It makes me angry that he keeps denying it. Every time he does it, he brings it back to us. I just wish that he would just admit that she was drunk. Maybe if he knew what happened that morning, if they were arguing or anything, that would be the truth. He wants the truth. We do. End quote.
Wow. So that was one of the guys, the older guy that got hit head on's daughter.
Mm-hmm. It was Nicotina Bastardi's daughter.
Okay. Wow.
Daniel did not appear months later on the 2009 Oprah Winfrey show about the crash. He had hired an attorney. There were several lawsuits over the next couple of years. Daniel, in return, filed his own lawsuit against his brother-in-law, who owned the red minivan, and that suit was dismissed. But I was just like, what in the world could you have sued him about or tried to sue him about?
Yeah, how could you sue him over the red minivan?
Were you going to try to be like, was the car, like, faulty or some shit? It was
faulty. Yeah, like, no.
So, some of the theories about the crash, there are quite a few theories about what really happened to Diane Shuler. They include deliberate intoxication, which, do you feel like she deliberately drank?
I don't know. I mean,
it's just weird. I saw some people talking about the abscess in her tooth, the vodka bottle. Maybe she was like trying to like
numb the pain,
make it stop hurting.
Yeah.
But maybe she took too much and she got drunk before she knew it. But like, I don't know. It's just, I feel like you don't get drunk that quickly unless you just down it. But like, would she do that?
Yeah, and it has to be pretty intentional.
Yeah.
Either way, she was fucking drunk.
Yeah. Then another theory is accidental intoxication. However you can do that.
Accidentally, I don't get that drunk. One.
A mental breakdown.
I believe that one too. Like I said earlier, like she kind of
showed... It could have been a mental breakdown.
Yeah, she kind of showed signs of like manic bipolar disorder on top of drinking and all that stuff.
True. She kind of did. And she wouldn't have... She didn't go to get checked out for like her abscess too. She wasn't about to go for something exactly. like about your mind. Several possible medical explanations, including a blood clot, pain from her abscess tooth, and even auto-brewery syndrome. I also saw stroke. The stroke may seem like a possibility because of the slurred speech and how she just didn't feel like herself. It could explain like the swerving of the lanes. Maybe like one side went numb.
Yeah, I've also heard that if you have an abscess tooth and it doesn't get taken care of, it can go straight to your, like, send an infection straight to your brain.
And oh, for real. That's true because it's like right there.
Yeah, so
it's close to it.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, I don't know what the symptoms of that would be, but I just know that it's possible that that can happen. So that could true. Be another possibility.
Yeah. So we will never know what Diane was thinking the day of the crash. Did something happen between her and Daniel that morning? Did she deliberately get drunk and stoned? The tox report indicated that she smoked weed approximately 1 hour before her death. I still, like I said, I don't know how you can actually tell that.
Yeah, how you know that? I guess, okay, the only thing that I could think is how they've done studies probably to see how marijuana breaks down in the body, but I still don't think that that is very reasonable either because everyone metabolizes it differently. Yeah, everybody metabolizes it differently. So how do you know?
Exactly, how do you know? I think y'all just
mad she smoked pot.
I don't know why y'all keep throwing in weed because like weed is not gonna fuck you up that bad like alcohol. So we just don't know what happened. Everything's just a bunch of questions. Nobody knows why she drove the wrong way and killed everybody. It's sad, but we don't. But I wanted to ask you, do you think that there's something that we can take from this case? I feel like maybe we can, like, start being like, from this case, I kind of, this is what I took from it.
Yeah, I think that, like, definitely, because she was holding in so much of her stress, so much of her trauma, so much of her pain, and she wasn't letting it out. She wasn't talking to anybody about it. She wasn't leaning on anybody for support. Her husband worked all the time. He was never home to help her raise the kids. Like, that's a lot for one person to do, to maintain the household, maintain the children, maintain your mental state. You know, do things for yourself, not just, you know, the family. Like, that has to take an extreme toll on her. And whether it was mental health issues, which is, I think, a very important part in this too, because she obviously suffered mental issues with what happened in her past, but it also didn't help with the stress and then the abuse of what we think would be alcohol and hiding that too. That has a complete toll on your everyday mental, physical, everything. And I think that's what it kind of boiled down to. That was the breaking point. And I don't think she intentionally did this to kill her children and her nieces. I think it just unfortunately came to its tipping point that day.
But even then, it's still like, I just don't understand how you came about it.
Which is incredibly sad.
I just don't understand. I want to know.
I mean, I don't think people really plan to have a mental breakdown.
No, but I mean, like, I just don't understand how you can have a mental breakdown and drive the wrong way on a highway. Like, how does that go about?
Oh, I don't get it either, but it happens, and it's wild. And I wish we had more answers from this case, but...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The only person that would have been able to tell anybody anything would have been Diane, and she didn't live to tell the tale.
Yeah. And then the son that did survive, he's like, he has no recollection of it, which... Good for him, because...
It's probably a blessing.
It would be way too traumatic.
Oh, yeah. Way too much.
So, that's basically the case for today. It was a short one. I think it's the shortest one I've done. But it was interesting. I hope y'all think it was interesting, too.
Yeah, it was definitely a wild one. Like, short, but... leaving me with so many questions.
Short but sweet.
Yeah, short but not too sweet. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
All right, well, you guys know it. Everything we talked about today will be over on our Instagram and our blog.
Yes. And what else? There's a show that Erin has been watching. It's called, what is it called, with Kesha in it? She said it was really cool.
It's Conjuring Kesha, and it is on... I think I said Discovery Plus.
Yeah, I think you said Discovery Plus.
If not, yeah.
Have y'all watched
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and it's like her, it's her filming at different locations. And like a lot of people I saw, the reviews were like, oh, she's not so professional with it. And I'm like, dude, I kind of like it, because that'd be like me and you up in there. Like, serious 1 minute, trying to figure.
Like, not really even knowing. Yeah, but like, hi, ghosts. Who's here?
Yeah, serious for a minute, like, trying to figure this shit out. And the next minute, we're like, nah, fuck that, I'm leaving. To, okay, hey.
Yeah.
Like, it's cool. But I think what I like the most about it is at the end of every episode, like, they kind of figure something out. Whether it's, you know, somebody who came in that wasn't a believer and now they are. Or they figured out more about the history of the place. Because they bring in, like, psychics. They, like, she'll bring in lots of people. And every... place that she goes, she brings another famous person with her. So,
oh, that's super cool. I definitely need to check it out.
The first episode was at the Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, which is here in Tennessee, and Kale and I went there last September or something like that, and it was creepy as shit, but it was cool because the episode she did, they went into a place where you can't see on the tour.
Oh.
And that's where they believe like a demon is. Yeah. It got crazy. Yeah. So y'all have to check that out.
Yeah. You do. All right then. We'll see y'all on our next episode. Bye.
All right. See you guys.